Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
46% of Americans expect to leave behind financial obligations when they pass away, so it's crucial to make sure your family is financially protected. Policy Genius helps you find the right life insurance coverage by comparing options from America's top insurers with help from licensed, award-winning agents. Secure your financial future with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get free life insurance quotes in just a few clicks. That's policygenius.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode number 31 of the Hunting Collective. I'm Ben O'Brien. Today, I am in the Meat Eater offices, Bozeman, Montana. I'm joined with our friend Ryan Callahan for another appearance on the podcast. And before we get started, I would note that you are now going to find all the Hunting Collective content, all the podcasts, all the articles, all the things that we do here on themeateater.com. That's where it will live for the longer term as we fold the Hunting Collective into the network that we've announced last week and the company that we're calling Meat Eater Incorporated. And that's why one of the better guests we could have on to talk through some of that, talk through some other awesome topics, is that of First Light's PR and Communication Director. I believe that's his title, Ryan Callahan. So enjoy episode number 31. Ryan Callahan. How you doing, man?
I'm doing really well. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well, too. We're here in Bozeman, Montana.
Yeah, beautiful Los Angeles.
As a newbie to the state and the town, I have to figure out the lingo, the proper lingo.
I told you I was hanging out with my grandpa last night, and we were talking about Bozeman, and he's like, yeah, you know, I went over there and spent a few days hanging out with my dad worked for Gallatin County for a short time.
Yep.
And he's like, yeah, he's like, I saw five like really nice little sports car convertibles with these women in them that are like blonde, and you could tell that they had like some upgrades, and he didn't say upgrades, but you can fill in the blank there. And his takeaway was, you know, they looked really comfortable being there. As in, these aren't Montana people and they're comfortable there, so that means that they're living there. And that's like his
whole...
They
seem to be taking up stake. They seem to stake some land out for themselves.
Yes, and he was like, so there.
Yeah.
Yep. He's like, don't live in Bozeman. He's like, place has gone to hell.
Well, listen, hipsters have a manifest destiny that goes unchallenged. When they want to live in your place, they're coming, dude. And there's nothing you can do about it.
New age squatters.
Yeah, pioneering. It's really the pioneering of the kombucha bar.
Yes.
As I found here. So, yes, I mean, we are in the guts, really. I mean, I would describe it as the guts of the new Meat Eater Incorporated office. And, yeah, Steve Rinella is just, well, I don't know, out there pilfering items. But this is the brand new gut. Oh, Yanni's making... taking his tongue out. It's real. It's very
it is. It's pretty funny.
It's pretty entertaining here. But yeah, this is the guts. I mean, we literally just walked into it and like picked some tables up and put them down. And it's brand new. So what are you thinking? Like, does this have potential, this office space?
Well, yeah. You know, I mean, it's a little built out for my taste. You know, I like to tear things down to the studs and go from there. But
that's why I'm asking, because I know you are an expert in the...
No, it's cool. Yeah, I like the metal and concrete. That stuff works for me pretty well.
Yeah,
heartbreak.
It is, but you know, hopefully by now, if you're listening to this, that you've heard about Meat Eater Incorporated as a thing. You know about Meat Eater TV and Steve Rinella, and of course that's why Cal's around, because he's a meat eater guy. In fact, we were saying that at lunch today. It's like, I've heard Steve Rinella described as the first leg guy. And I've heard you described as a meat eater guy.
Yes.
And of course, vice versa.
I love your show. You know, I'm always like, well, hey, there's a lot of people that work on that show that do a really good job, and it's hard, and I'm not one of them. So
I just show up.
Yep.
Try to look good.
Yep. Yeah, man. So I need to ask you what everybody asked me.
Yeah.
What is Meat Eater Inc?
Yeah. I mean, two podcasts ago, I talked about like why we're doing it, but I don't feel like what it is answered so much in the why we're doing it, right? Because you and I share a why. Like, we both, you know, we're both on the board for BHA. We both just kind of feel the same way about certain things. Not all things, but certain things that are relatively important to our lives. And so the why has kind of been discussed, but the what is very much to be determined, I would say. Like, we all have, what we were talking about earlier, I mean, we have these titles and we have a building, we have all this space, but like, doesn't really mean anything because we've done relatively nothing to this point. But we're going to be a media company, and we're going to be a media company that does a lot of things, including Meat Eater TV and the Meat Eater brand and all that stuff, including the Hunting Collective and the Hunting Collective brand and all the stuff that comes with it currently and hopefully as it grows. But we're also going to just be something a little bit different. Like, I feel personally, having been in the media world for a while, and you certainly have PR in your title for First Light, that there are some holes in the boat when it comes to how we produce media for hunting, fishing, conservation, all of it. Not to say there's not a bunch of good stuff happening, but I feel like there are some expressed holes in our the tactic that we take to talk both to the outside world, but also to ourselves, like how media is produced for hunters and in hunting specifically. So we're going to be a media company that tries to always start with our ethos and our why, but then looks to be innovative and do stuff different and create content in ways that's engaging that maybe is not there right now around a lot of things, but particularly culinary world where Steve comes from, you know, and is connected to, and the conservation world, which you have a lot to do with and as I do in my history and my present. So it's a hard thing to nail down. This doesn't have like a one sentence description, but At its core, it's just a bunch of people that believe the same thing that decided this was the best thing to do with their lives.
And you guys are going to be producing media.
Yep.
It's a media company. So
that's right.
That is a TV show or shows?
Yeah, hopefully shows, I would hope. I mean, you know, if we could have a media company in the very short term, if our entire company could be as successful as the Meat Eater company, or you know, the Meat Eater brand has been to this point, we'd be happy. In the very longer term, we would like to have 10 different brands that look like Meat Eater. That Meat Eater has books that Steve does, it has TV shows, it has podcasts, it has live events. We would like to have a myriad of those things across a bunch of different platforms and in a bunch of different ways, you know, different voices, different subject matter, you know, fly fishing, we're even looking at foraging. We're looking at, of course, we're looking at, you know, pike and walleye and mountain hunting and waterfowl hunting and, you know, small game, whatever we can get to. And so, yeah, man, we'd like to create different types, those different types of experiences across a bunch of subject matters with a bunch of different voices that a lot of folks that have been heard from, some that haven't. I mean, we'll have some folks that will sign on and we'll hope to help them discover their voice and get people excited about who they are that maybe nobody knows about right now. So that's also cool, man. Like, you know, well as I do, it's a pretty unique position to be in, to be able to like take someone that you think has the power to, you know, give people perspective and change their minds and give them a platform and say, go for it, kick ass, go do it. So,
and by the way, everybody should be paying attention to this
person. To this person. Yeah. So that's exciting. But for me, as somebody who cares about the hunting industry, this is just a new thing that has the power to change some things, I think.
Cool. And in your perspective, like what's like the number one change that's on your hit list?
Yeah. Well, I think, and there's a lot, but I think the first one is creating content for the audience only. You know, I've said this a million times internally here, but if anyone comes in and starts creating content around motivations that are external to the audience, the folks that we're talking to and that are investing in our content, then you're out. Like, I will kick you out. I will walk you out the door. Everybody can think of examples in not only the hunting fishing space, but in just general media where, you know, not everybody expressly cares about the audience. In fact, most don't. Most care about the audience tuning in so they get their number, so they make their money. But like, there's an expressive, like, I care about you being a smarter person, being more intelligent. That makes us all better. Hence, you know, rising tide lifts all boats. And so as somebody who has a journalism degree and wants to change the thing, that's the main thing I want to change, is that we'll listen to our audience and be here for them rather than for advertisers or for some power that be somewhere else. So I certainly have heard some talk about that we might have a certain motivation, like this company might have been formed for a certain reason, and I'll tell you, it's the reason we've expressly stated is the reason why we're doing it is because we care about we think the outdoors are a sacred place. We care about the natural world. We think it makes us all better, and we want to have better interactions with it. And like we said that. Steve said it. I've said it. We've all said it. We sat in a room just like this one and came up with it like a month ago. And that was a cool experience.
Yeah.
To sit in a room with people I respect and trade a bunch of ideas and try to come to a why that it was important to us. And I think after we made the announcement, it's the first time I've ever seen that we had like 99.999% positive reaction to it.
The internet was broken that day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The assholes forgot to show up. They'll get to it eventually. I mean, let's be honest.
Trade-offs, right? So you're no longer at Yeti. You're no longer in Texas.
No.
And you haven't been posting up all sorts of hunting pictures.
No.
So what have you been doing?
I like how we reverse interview. I like this.
Yes.
I love it. What I've been doing
seeing
is building
my plan,
building this thing, you know? No, I mean, when you know, folks that follow people in the hunting industry that hunt a lot, it starts to become this, it's kind of the thing you do, right? You stay home for 3 weeks and you start to think, whoa, why have I not accomplished anything? I'm not off somewhere else. So I pretty early on in like knowing I was going to leave where I was and come to Montana, knowing that we were going to be building a company that I felt was pretty substantial. And I feel that, you know, other than Steve and some other folks, I feel a grand amount of ownership and responsibility in how it goes and that it goes well and goes right. So I sat down with my wife and I said, you know, I think it's probably better that as we move and we're building a house here in Montana, we're doing all these things, we're building a company that, you know, those things come first. I'm always a hunter and always a traveling some bitch, but in the, you know, over this couple of months this fall, it's been focused on those things, which are as important as anything for our future. And I have a clear intention to hunt the West over the next 30 years like a madman. And so I'm just giving it a break.
Giving it a breather?
Giving it a little breather.
It's like a warming shot.
It's just like, I don't want, I'm just, you know, I'm not even going to dip my toe in. I'll look at it for a while and just determine which deep end of the pool I'm diving into. So yeah. I know that too. And moving out West has always been something I thought about, never thought it would happen. So there's a little bit of a, is this real? Can I hunt elk over there? Really?
Sweet.
Is this a trick? So I know you have a different perspective living in Montana or growing up in Montana, living in Idaho. But for me, it's very much like this looking around like, okay, I got to take some time to breathe this in before it's like mine kind of in some weird way.
Oh, man. Yeah. The diversity of this state is just so wild.
Yeah.
So wild. Yeah.
And I got all the meat I'd ever need. Like I got meat. I felt, you know, I shot an axis deer. We shot axis deer together.
Yes.
And I felt like I brought that home and I was like, I love axis deer. And I started like hammering that shit to the top of my freezer. Like there's no room for it. And we moved here. I thought, you know, okay. Probably should take some time to eat some of this, clear it out.
Yeah, to rotate the freezer.
You're killing at a breakneck pace, you know. And that's, I felt a little bit like that experience for me was a little bit like, that's a little bit inappropriate. If you have all the meat you need.
Yeah.
Like,
it's, so I did not shoot a elk with my bow.
Yeah.
This year, which is the first time in a long time. And I was like, I passed up a bull the second day of the season.
Yep.
And I was like, oh man, I can't believe I did that. But then passed up another one, passed up another one. And that was like a huge part of like the calming voice in my head was like, I was thinking about the freezer at home and I'm like, I'm really going to rotate that thing this year. Like I'm going to eat everything in there and start fresh. And I only need X amount. And there's folks that I always give meat to that truly want it. And so they'll have to experiment with some different cuts this year. But
they're going to do a lot of top round cooking this year.
Yeah. So, I was kind of saying I've been out a lot and having fun as you know, but it's, high levels of anxiety. Hi. I'm like,
that's the right kind of anxiety. Yeah, like, you're really going to not do that?
Yeah.
No, I had high levels of anxiety, like looking at the Instagrams and seeing all the people hunting. Because when it becomes like you're, like we've talked, like I have this unwillingness to do anything that wouldn't forward my hunting life. Like I have this, like somebody said, you know what? Here, man, $2 million. We're going to pay you that $2 million a year and you're going to come work for the New York Times and you're going to be like the, you know, editor in chief of the New York Times. I'd be like, listen, man, that's a lot of money, but no. It's like, no. Because so that it gives me solace. Like it gives me solace in an intangible sense that I know I'm moving to Montana where my hunting opportunities are going to explode, you know, as just like being able to take my young son and take him around locally and hunt and fish and do those things. Like that's, so I have that in my mind, but the last couple of months watching other people go run around and it gives you some perspective on like when you're in it. Cause last year, the year before that, and probably the last 8 years, I didn't go 2 weeks at home during September, October, November, December.
Yeah.
And so this time I just went 2.5 months without doing much. And so it gives you a little bit of perspective of maybe what it seems like when you're not, you know, when you're just armchairing it.
So I'm sure you could pull it up, but I think, you know, your average hunter is in the field not even a full weekend.
Oh yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we always talk about 14 million or 10 million or whatever the number is. That's an imperfect number anyway. But there is this projection. We project this like a hunter is someone who just fucking hunts all the time. And so I think there's a lot of
and
people.
And something always dies.
Yeah, something always dies. And that's why I've always appreciated you and appreciated Steve and like the connected to that, because there's this there's other appreciations that there's other priorities that go along with the hunting. But you just enjoy spending time outside. You don't enjoy like overly enjoy or fetishize the killing of a giant thing. Like that'll come, but it's not, and it's part of the presentation, but it's not a. Yeah, it's not overly expounded upon. Like, I killed a big thing. Woo, woo, woo. It's like, I killed a big thing. That happened to be the end of the great 10 days in the wilderness.
Yeah.
Then I ate it, and it just happened to be big, you know?
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Man, I found a couple of big bulls this year and chased them. It was super fun. And like I said, I hunt a broadside elk, and that is it. Yeah. It may have antlers, it may not. And
that's a good, that's like a t-shirt. I hunt broadside elk.
That's it.
It's period.
Man, give me a broadside elk. And because then I've always felt like, okay, that meat is in the freezer. There's a huge return, right? Elk's a big animal. Mm-hmm. And once that's in the freezer, then it doesn't matter if I miss or break a leg, like it's in there.
Yeah.
And but then I'm basically free to hunt after that. It kind of sounds weird, but I'm like, elk is on the grocery list. It gets put in the freezer. And then when that is done, then I'm actually hunting.
Yeah.
And purely going out with the main purpose of just hunting. And what I know we've talked about it before, but you know, the trigger pull part ends your hunting.
Yeah.
That's when hunting stops.
Yeah.
And so typically, like, yeah, I don't touch that trigger again. You know, for the rest of the year sometimes, yeah, right? Man. So yeah, man, I got a lot of nights in the woods. Just like a lot of Idaho was hot and clear the whole time and didn't bring a tent. Until
I remember you were I was texting you and you're like, well, I'm just going to hunt. I run out of food and I'll be back.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
And it's so like, I feel so relaxed and so comfortable when I hunt that way.
Yeah.
Because like, I know I have everything I need and it's like, I just get to go and I get to make. There's no decision of like, well, I got to find, there's not even the decision of being like, well, I got to find a big enough spot for my tent. It's like, here's an elk bed, blow up my air mattress and
go.
Pass out for the night.
Yeah, man.
And it's just like so simple that it is addictive.
So here's a question, something I always think about and I've said in the past, like, do you change the way you think about hunting every year?
Oh, you know, I think I do. Yeah, if I was honest, yeah.
I do for sure. Even this year, not having hunted as much. Well, shit. Over the last 2 months, I hunted plenty in the first half of the year, but like having to take some time off. Anyway, you feel like, is there moments of reflection, or is it just like every year you see, oh, a different chapter in the book? Maybe I'm gonna, you know, present this chapter differently, or you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it, well, like, yeah, this year, instead of being like, boy, I got to get, you know, the last of this animal in the cooler and get it up and drop it off with my dad, because yeah. He's somebody who always wants at least half an elk, so I can make room for the elk that I just got. Taking it to folks at the office or whoever, instead of having that mind, because I know I'm going to get an elk, I was like, I'm just not going to shoot an elk. Okay. And I kept calling them in and messing with them. maybe even purposely educating some. So somebody else who I didn't feel had quite earned it. Like I
could
see
you talking to the elk, like, listen, I know you came all this way in, but we got to talk.
Yeah. And, you know, I know I told you about this, but I called in my closest ever elk.
Yeah.
And that never would have happened because I would have shot the thing three or four different times before he even came in. But he literally, I didn't know this was in this area where these big bulls were hanging out. And I could hear this bull raking a tree. And I knew it wasn't like the big bull, because when the big bull was raking a tree, it literally sounded like a 4x4 getting whacked against a tree.
Yeah.
Like it was like whack. It was very similar to like hearing a moose like whack a tree and sound off. And so I knew it wasn't that bull, but needed to put eyes on it. And so I snuck in there and cow called a couple of times and just hung out. And eventually, you know, raghorn bull comes walking over the hill and I'm like, oh, that's cool. And had an arrow knocked, right? Like I was ready. But then he just kind of kept coming and then turned and got on the same trail that I was on. And he, you know, was looking for that cow and there's a tree across the trail and he's at like 7 yards now. And I'm like, okay, well, he's going to stop at the tree. And then he gets up to the tree and does like the full horse, like 4-footed leap over the tree. And he lands basically at like 3 yards. I'm like, whoa, that's wild. And I'm thinking, are you going to be like a Yellowstone tourist and like wind up skewered by this bull?
Because we don't think about that enough, man. That is a dangerous situation.
It is a dangerous situation.
One wrong move and you're freaking toast.
All you have to do is freak out and go forward instead of backwards.
In a gruesome ass way, too.
Yeah. And like, I was like, you know, a big part of that that led me down this decision path was I came up with like this, all I can describe it as is like this getting older malady. Mm. Like I hadn't been out hammering.
What?
And training. And I hadn't even gotten on my freaking mountain bike at all. And I was busting butt on the house and trying to get it done and trying to get ahead at first light enough to feel good about being outside. We did a monster hike opening day of the season, grabbed my overnight gear that night, went back out, another monster hike. And man, I was pretty crippled on this foot thing. And then I'm like, boy, and then you compound that by getting skewered in the guts by some raghorn bull. I'm like, there's no way I'm getting out of here. This bull just kept walking and so part of me is like, you better do something. And then the other part of me is like, or just see how close he comes. And so 29 inches, the bull came in
20. That's close. Is that closer to me and you?
Yes.
We're probably 50 inches apart.
And I had my arrow on the string, right? And he came in and sniffed the broadhead. And you could, like, I've never been that close to an elk, obviously. No. And he came in and sniffed the broadhead. And I just remember, like, staring at his forehead being like, boy, this must be a really good year for horn growth because this thing's head is so tiny. I bet it's normally a spike.
Yeah.
A normal year, it's probably a spike. And you could just see like the facial expression of like recognition of like, man, never seen this before, but it is not right. And then it somehow peeled around without touching me or the arrow and stood broadside. There's my broadside elk at maybe 15 yards and just stared at me. And then I was waiting for it to bark and
blow the area up, and then it just kind of like relaxed completely and then dropped his head and ate and walked off. And I'm like, well, never would have experienced that.
No.
And that was a sweet experience. You know, it's not elk meat in the freezer, but
yeah, but again, the only thing you left off the story was, well, I draw back a shot at.
Yeah. Like, yeah, yeah.
You know, that's one sentence in a freaking, you know, a 500 word article.
Yes.
You know? And so that's the beautiful part about that. But yeah, I mean, I found it, I started doing it, I think like 5 years ago when I started thinking, oh, I'm kind of like in the hunting industry as a professional person. Like I'm hunting a lot for my job. It's just taking like a day. I never, or a moment whenever it hit me to like think about like, holy shit, how am I hunting right now that I haven't like last year, the year before that, 5 years ago when I was a kid, I would have never done some of the stuff I do now or thought some of them. I'm sure when you were a kid, you would never, probably never let an elk walk up to sniff your broadhead.
No.
Yeah. You know, and so no. I always try to like think back and recognize those changes and be, you know, super cognizant of each year how I what I do differently.
Yeah, man, and just trying to be honest with yourself, mm-hmm. right? Like we worked so hard, and it was always on the weekend.
Yeah.
And we worked so hard to get one opportunity. It was like if you got one opportunity archery elk hunting in the state of Montana, whether you let an arrow fly or not, that was a successful season for
us.
Oh,
yeah.
Like that was like a major success. Like
yeah.
the bull was there, had an opportunity, and I screwed it up or I killed it.
Yeah.
Like that, it was all you could, and that was kind of a big ask, right? Like that was working really hard on the weekends, just like everybody else.
Yeah.
And now I try to work really hard and if I could stay out there for a month, I would stay out there for a month. And in just, yeah, I mean, the reality is in the opening week of archery season in Idaho, I hunted more than most people will, than the majority yeah. of hunters will the entire season.
Yeah.
Right?
We were talking about that. That's a huge thing, I think.
It
that
is.
That maybe doesn't, you know, there's a lot of things about like what we do and who people think we are that, that, is helpful, I think, to the hunting industry, but there's part of that that changes. It's changed me to an extent. We were just talking about another point about free hunting gear. And I think it's the amount of days hunting and the free hunting shit that I get and you get and like just we get as part of our thing here.
Yeah. And so caution people when they're like, oh man, that's badass. It's like, yeah. Well, I am actually a catered to individual.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
I have, it's silly. I am a spoiled man.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I was moving, I was looking at my garage and I was like, come on. Like, no, this is wrong. Like, this
yeah,
is not right.
Man. I mean, so what's more badass, right? Like being in this position where you get the time, like, hey, no, you are going elk hunting this week.
Yeah.
Dedicated week.
Better get out there.
Yeah. And you at least have at your disposal some really solid discounts
yeah.
to get the best stuff on the market too. Or, you know, the guy's swinging the hammer and dropping his tool belt at 5 o'clock and driving all night long and
yeah,
and going out there for all day Saturday because he's got to get back for his kid's birthday on Sunday type of thing. You know, it's like,
I think there's this, there's something that happens and it's a natural, these are natural things. Like it doesn't make me bad or you bad or anybody who's in our industry bad for it. But I've spent the last, you know, a bunch of podcasts previous to this one, just talking to, you know, not even guides. I just did one with a rabbit hunter in Maryland who is just a regular guy. But he's like buys his brush pants at Cabela's, but he's the best rabbit hunter I've ever met in my life, you know, because his perspectives are so different because he doesn't like, he's, I just got that one pair of brush pants he doesn't have boxes of like prototype stuff to test out and things like that. You know, it's
people being like, please test these out for us.
Yeah. And so I think that just changes, you know, me personally. I don't know if anybody cares about my personal thing, but that has changed me. And I've had to like take a few steps back from that and be like, be appreciative of the time you spend outside and appreciative of the things that you're wearing and the privileges you have around that. Be appreciative of that. And then also know that the guy, there's a little bit more virtue in the guy that works 5 days a week and takes his tool belt off and goes hunting. Like, yeah. And I was that guy, so were you for a very long time. And like, there's a little bit more virtue, just like a teeny bit more virtue.
Yeah. So folks in the positions of like, you got sponsors that are willing to pay and ship your butt around the country and I do feel like the days of this happening aren't quite what they used to be, but you know, there was definitely a time where, the only media out there was written media and there were only a few folks worth reading and those folks got shipped around the world.
Oh yeah.
And they were, I mean, catered to.
Oh man.
Because they needed that article.
And it sure did produce, some of them are kind of just assholes now. Because they went through 30 years of being catered to.
Yeah. And man, they if you're going to be in that position, you better recognize that you're a pretty spoiled cat.
Oh yeah.
So you better give something back somehow, some way.
There's a ton of people that do that and do it well and understand their position but have worked hard to get there. So I mean, it's not that you should feel bad about that. But that's something I've been thinking about, and we talk about. We were just before we hit record talking about like seeing it in other people. Like I've had it for a while. You've had it for a while. Like. Seeing somebody just start with a box of gear showing up and just start to realize I could just have that. Could I just that right there? I just take that?
Yeah.
And then nobody would say anything. I just be like, oh, that person is now figuring out, you know, what this is and the benefits of it.
And I always caution. I'm like, you know, nothing in life is free.
No.
And there is a, cost associated, and you better recognize that.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And I think, you know, we won't belabor that point because I think sometimes these conversations just become two people talking, and like you think, do people really care about this?
You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. Hey, Steve here. I want to talk about something crucial for any outdoor enthusiast, which is battery reliability. I've got Interstate batteries powering my gear. I have Interstate batteries in my camper. I run an Interstate battery in my boats. I use Interstate batteries because the last thing I want is to be left powerless. Interstate Batteries isn't just another battery company. They are outrageously dependable. In Alaska, the boat dealer that we use for getting stuff and repairs, he uses Interstate. Whether you're gearing up for hunting season, planning your next RV trip, or getting your boat ready, Interstate has the battery for all your needs. With over 150,000 dealer locations, the power you need is always nearby. Interstate batteries aren't just about power. It's about being prepared for any situation. Don't let a dead battery ruin your adventure. Head over to interstatebatteries.com, use their store locator, and equip yourself with a battery that won't let you down. When you're out in the wild or just on your daily commute, an Interstate battery is your key to a dependable journey.
Here's another. So I'm going to totally flip. There's no segue at all. I got no segue, but it's something I was thinking about as we were having lunch today. We were having a nice long conversation about public land versus private land.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the feeling that as you know, I feel there's some danger. I don't know if we've never talked about this, but maybe we have a little bit. I feel like there is some, there's always inherent danger with trends, right? And trendiness moreover. There's danger with something being cool. Right? When it gets to be cool, people start doing it for inauthentic reasons or talking about it for inauthentic reasons. Public lands have kind of started to trend that way, or it's become a trend to talk about. I feel like a lot of companies are talking about public land. A lot of individuals are talking about public land. I love it. I love that all. And yes. I would never say don't do it, but I there's always a little drawback to that, which is the,
yeah. You may alienate.
Yes.
Folks
you and I know a few folks that are private landowners or landowners. You wouldn't even say private. They're landowners and ranchers who feel slighted.
Yes.
Because they feel like as we champion, you know, kind of the mystique of public land hunting and the effort it takes to go and do it all on your own and the idealistic link it has to our nation and what it means to be American and, you know, keep harking back to the turn of the century and these important figures, there's not a similar storyline for private lands and ranching and habitat they're in. And so there's this perceived undercurrent of anger or animosity that you've seen a little bit, I've seen a little bit, I think kind of has bubbled up in some ways.
Yes.
Is worth addressing.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the good argument is, oh, you're a public landowner. What do you actually do for the land? Mm-hmm. I am a rancher. I have my property and I am out taking care of it to the best of my ability every single day. That's what I do. What are you doing with your public landowner t-shirt?
I got one on right now.
And that argument I absolutely get, and I love people.
Yeah.
Like, I think everybody who wears that public landowner shirt should be challenged.
Yeah.
And say, yeah, well, what are you doing for public land?
Yep.
I think make it happen.
Yeah.
Because I want that conversation to happen.
Right. And I was even talking to Lantani yesterday from BHA, and I said, I don't want it to feel like I'm downing the trendiness of public lands. That's what I want.
Yes.
I want to expound upon that and how important it is and continue to beat that drum. And I will always continue to beat that drum because I know what it means and what it means to me. So not bagging it.
No.
But addressing
the negative side.
And this once it becomes the trend as it has been, then you can start to evaluate its effect on our culture and our shared ideas. And it's having an effect, I think, a little bit right now.
The conversation that isn't positive or productive is when somebody feels like they aren't cool because they're like, well, I am hunting on private land and everybody talks about how cool public lands are. And I think my private land's pretty cool. And so I don't like you guys.
The nomenclature of hunting has changed. the way we describe the what things we do has changed to the point where it's like if someone killed an elk, they're like, man, killed a good bull. If someone kills a bull on public land, they've now killed a public land bull. Like it has a modifier in front and it does not go anywhere without its public land bull title.
Yep. Like, no, that's very true. And very true.
And then that is just part of like the acceptance of this thing can be a little bit tougher, a little bit more, pioneering to just go in a land that and figure it out and do it yourself. Like that's all good.
I mean, we did everything that we could to get access to private land in Montana growing up.
Yeah.
And it's, there's grass is always greener element to it for sure.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I just didn't know. It was like, well, I can see across the fence and there's a lot of elk out in that alfalfa field.
Oh yeah.
Like
how we get over there.
Yeah. How do I get over there?
Which is probably a way better and more virtuous way to look at that shit anyway. Like where are the elk are is where I'd like to go. I don't give a shit if it's owned by us or that guy.
Yeah.
I'd like to go over there.
But the thing that makes public land so challenging and frustrating. Like I saw more archery hunters in the woods this year than I ever have in my entire life.
Yeah.
And spots where I can be like, well, I'll never see anybody. Yeah. And like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Who is this idiot with a giant backpack? Who is not me, which is the issue here.
Yeah.
And that's why the public land deal is challenging is because you're out there with every other public landowner and it's competition and it makes it tough.
Yeah.
And that's why that little prefix should be on there.
Where
it's like,
I just noticed that lately, like this year, maybe because I was not in it and I was looking at it and I was like, there's definitely, we've changed the way we describe hunting because this animal that died as a modifier as to how it died, you know.
Yeah.
My public land archery bull.
And the animal doesn't care.
The animal gives two shits about that.
Where it expired.
I don't even care. So when I was a kid, I remember like we had a organic farm that we had access to hunt. It was, the lady said, kill every deer you see.
Yeah.
They jump over the fence, they eat my crops, and that's how I make my money. And so we would go there and we would see tons of deer. I mean, this place was full of deer. It wasn't a big place, maybe 500-600 acres, something like that. And we would go and kill 5, 6, 7 deer in a day. And we'd get all our food. This lady would be happy. It'd be great. But then we had public land that was probably 45 minutes from my front door. That was, to me at the time, mountains. Mm-hmm. Like it was wild place, creek crossings, park the truck, walk for miles, do your thing. And then this private land was very much just like get out of the truck, walk down the trail, sit on the log, shoot the deer. And so without even knowing it as a kid, public land to me was this like adventure situation. And private
land. Because it's the unknown.
Is this the unknown? So for me, like I was doing it without even realizing like, we were just like, we're going to go to Green Ridge State Forest. That's where we're going. Like it's great. You go up mountains, you cross creeks, like. Other people could be there. It's cool. It's like mysterious. And then you go to this private farm. You're like, we walk down the trail and you go past the garden about 1,500 yards, go down the draw and then sit on that log there.
And get a deer.
And get a deer.
Yes. And that's how you refer to it, right?
Yeah, it's like, and get a deer.
My uncle down the road here, I was like, this is grocery shopping.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah. And it's great. I mean, and if you want to talk about like the real the hypocrisy here is like, he has deer that live and die in that alfalfa field and they taste great and he can harvest one. And I do think in this case, harvest is the absolute appropriate.
Yeah. Because he is plucking it out of the field, much like the soybeans.
Without really doing anything different in his day.
Yeah.
Like he can step out of the tractor. He can shoot the deer. He can continue on with the tractor.
Yeah.
When he gets to where the deer expired, he will then throw it on the tractor or in the tractor.
So it's a bit of a detour.
Yes. And just continue on.
Yeah.
And, you know, he has told me many, many times, he's like, you can have anybody out here as long as they appreciate it. And he appreciates that land like deep in his soul, and it exudes from his eyeballs.
Yeah.
Like he, man, like he takes great, great pride, and he's seen the changes firsthand. He's got his hands dirty every single day, and he's 60 some years old now, and maybe even older. I don't know. Sorry, Jeffrey. And that is a real thing. And folks like him, I hope to God they don't feel slighted by people being so happy about public lands.
Yeah, that's what at lunch today, you and I and Ranella were talking about. Like, don't feel, just because we say we love public lands doesn't mean we hate private land.
No.
And that we had a particular person that felt that way, you know, that reached out to you and me and Steve almost like separately, but like in the same thread. That's like, I have private land and nobody's celebrating this.
Right. Yeah.
You know, there's no t-shirts for this thing. Like, okay, well, there's reasons for that. But moreover, I don't hate your thing. In fact, I aspire to have a ranch one day if I could. I would love to. You're a lucky sucker. That's why we don't have to celebrate you. It'd be like, it's like the Oscars, like celebrating rich, famous people. We don't need to do that.
Yeah.
You know, if you have that access, you've already won. Like, you've won the game at some level.
Yeah, at some level. And it's, you know, people aren't helping you celebrate that more than, boy, that's a great bowl.
Yeah.
Because they don't get that experience either.
Yeah.
Right? The vast majority, to go back to the beginning here, like, you don't get that many days in the woods. And, you know, unless you're really dedicating time to, you know, track down those landowners and make sure that they know that you're not some knucklehead that's going to shoot a horse instead of an elk. Then you're probably not going to waste your one weekend doing that.
No.
Because you only got one weekend to go. So,
It strikes me now that we're going through this, that that idea that, you know, I was thinking about homesteading as you were talking there. Like, homesteading is part of was part of the American dream, right? It was part of like what people wanted to do. It's part of Manifest Destiny, going west and staking your ground. It was a big part of it. And that's being used by guys like Mike Lee as this draw to draw people in and convince them that you know, the new Homestead Act is what they need to be doing. When that, we both at this table know that's a veiled attempt to privatize these lands and sell the suckers.
Yes.
Which is a sad thing. Like, I would celebrate homesteading. I think homesteading is what this country, it isn't. It is what this country was built upon.
Yeah.
And there was a reaction to that that was public lands, that was national forests, that was national parks. It was a reaction to, like, we're out here staking all this land up. Let's make sure this part is for all of us. And so it spins, you know, the reason that private landowners are feeling a little slighted or feeling different from the crowd here as the crowd grows, public land hunters and folks that will wear the t-shirt, it opens up like some weird political chasm for like us against them.
Like, yeah.
Mentality. Red versus blue, private versus public.
And that's the nice thing is the public is for everybody.
Yeah.
So there is no us versus them.
Yeah.
It's, you know, if anything, maybe we've reduced the amount of folks stopping by and knocking on your door on a Sunday.
Yeah. Well, and Mike Lee is trying to convince people that because public land is elitist.
Yeah.
What? He's trying to convince private landowners and ranchers and people that fall on the red side of the coin that public land is an elitist principle.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just so wrong in so many ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people sleep in parks, public parks.
Yeah. Elitists.
Doesn't seem real elite.
Elitists. Yeah. Elitists. But yeah, I think that's all kind of spun together in this weird gumbo of hunting.
It is. And again, like so the, we were just did a Wyoming antelope hunt, with a couple of the guys from Hush and, the guys at Weatherby's now calling themselves Weatherby 3.0 internally. Probably shouldn't be telling everybody that, but, and it's cool because Adam Weatherby is CEO and he's running things and they're moving to Wyoming. The corporate office is in Wyoming already, mm-hmm. but they're moving the whole manufacturing out of California to Wyoming. And so we went out and did a antelope hunt together on private land. And oh my God, I had an absolute ball. Like just leisurely passing up antelope for truly no reason other than the fact that you could,
yeah.
And some other truck wasn't going to top over the ridge and whack that thing.
Yeah.
Right. And it was great. It was super, super fun. Great experience. And yeah. And that doesn't make me less of a public landowner.
No.
Or pro one thing, anti another.
Yeah. Where's your credibility lie? Like you're, what does that even, like, what does that even mean? Somebody asked me, like, what kind of how do you get your credibility as a hunter if you're just going to hunt private lands? I'm like, because there's an animal over there and you're over here and you go over and you kill it.
Yeah.
Like that's a skill.
Yeah.
That's an innate skill.
So there's some chunks of BLM that are landlocked there. And, I rode around with the rancher, the whole time and got a ton of bullshitting in, which I just loved.
Bullshitting with an old rancher is like that's kind of bullshit.
There awesome. Is. Awesome. You know, rattling around in the truck and you know, I'm just like I was when I was like 12 riding around with an old rancher. I was like a question every 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I'm like, enough about me.
Yeah. Enough what about me.
And
about that tree right there.
Yeah. He's like, well, what are you looking for? I'm like, I just want to see more of the ranch. I just want to keep doing what we're doing.
Yeah.
He's like, well, you know, he's like, you know, this is kind of like the average antelope and some of them will get a little bit bigger, but, and I'm like, dude, I do not care. I'm like, I just like this, what we're doing right now is what I'm after. This is awesome. And we had a great time. And, there are some chunks of BLM there that are completely landlocked. So public land, inaccessible public land, which is something I just drives me crazy.
Yep.
And, but you know, talking with this rancher about it, he's like, you know, I've tried to do some land swaps with the state because he's like, these things are honestly kind of a pain in my butt. And, he's like, tried to do this like 3 or 4 times. And swap out sections that are public. He's like, you know, and swap this stuff out so I don't have the public land inside.
Yep.
The perimeters of the ranch. And so that was an interesting conversation. And one of the Weatherby guys is like, well, you know, you probably want to shoot your antelope over there on that chunk of BLM. So it's since it's public.
That is the best. Ain't that like what we're talking about though?
Yes, you know? That's exactly what it is, right?
You're probably going to want, for credibility's sake, you want to go over there.
Right, because that's your thing, right?
Even though that public land is basically private.
Yeah, and
keep up appearances.
And I was just so excited to just be able to get bones home, which I never do because typically I have to leave them on the mountain to save some weight. And make stock. I was like, dude, I'm already on hog heaven. And what I care about in this particular situation is getting a pile of bones so I can make stock at home. And I haven't eaten an antelope in a long time, and I'm pumped about that. And I don't care if it's a 6-inch buck or a 16-inch buck.
Amen.
And I certainly don't care where it's standing.
Don't care where it's standing. I'm just trying to, for some reason lately, I'm trying to think about a lot of t-shirt ideas. We're going to start selling t-shirts on the podcast, or not on the podcast, but about it. I think that might be a nice one.
I don't care where it's standing.
Don't care where it's standing.
By the road. He doesn't care where he stands.
He don't care.
No.
He
no.
don't care.
I shot that 6.5 by 300.
Oh, yeah. That's a straight shooting son of a bitch, isn't it?
It's pretty cool. The casing on that thing is enormous.
Yep. It was 3 years ago now. I think I was one of the first guys to get it and like travel abroad with it or do anything crazy. We went to New Zealand and I missed a fallow deer like 316 yards. We were about 45 degree angle above this fallow deer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, I'm going to have to hold high. You know, I had shot, you know, I was living in Texas then. So I'm like, there was no ranges past 100 yards. So I'd only shot at 100 yards with this rifle. We go over there, we shoot our guns in. I'm doing good out to 200. We got this goat at this fallow deer, like 316 yards. I'm like, well, I'm going to have to hold high because we're going to have, you know, we got an angle, steep angle here. And I shot over this thing's back. And then I remember Adam Weatherby or someone at Weatherby saying, this thing is flat to 300 yards. And I thought, you're a dummy. Just hold on. So this fallow deer is running up this draw, and I just crack another round in there and just put right on the shoulder and drop him. At probably 350 yards. And that's when I realized, oh.
You know, Adam's a pretty impressive character.
Oh, my gosh.
He's like, he knows their loads, obviously, yeah. And he knows their guns. But he, for everybody shot, was like, yeah, you got about 10 mile an hour wind here.
Oh, yeah.
And that's coming out of the barrel at about 3,200 feet per second. So you're going to want to hold about 1.5 inches to the right. And you're like,
what?
Awesome. Like, you can you come with me on all my hunts?
Yeah.
Like, this is awesome. This
you're that's the best spotter ever.
Yes.
Well, he comes from a long line of impressive dudes. I can only imagine, you know, I've met his father and never did meet Roy Weatherby, but Ed Weatherby's just as impressive of a fella.
That's cool. I have to tell everybody that Ben and I are sitting here on our butts doing this podcast.
I got my back to the window.
And I'm watching Stephen Ranella carry.
What's he doing?
Physically move things into the office.
He's moving like tables boxes.
Yeah.
I thought he was, yep, he's giving Yanni a piggyback ride. He loves that little fella. He really likes him. Yeah, I have my back to the window, so I haven't been seeing, like, I'm aware that people are bringing things in, but they must think that we're, this is work though, right?
Yeah.
This is work.
You got Steve walking backwards with the meat eater CEO carrying a table up some stairs.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team effort. We're all for one for all around here. Unless you're podcasting, you got time to carry this shit. I mean, I'll eventually carry some stuff, I think, but I don't at this point. I don't think I don't want to hurt myself or anything.
No.
You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. Hey, Steve here. I want to talk about something crucial for any outdoor enthusiast, which is battery reliability. I've got Interstate batteries powering my gear. I have Interstate batteries in my camper. I run an Interstate battery in my boats. I use Interstate batteries because the last thing I want is to be left powerless. Interstate batteries isn't just another battery company. They are outrageously dependable. In Alaska, the boat dealer that we use for getting stuff and repairs, he uses Interstate. Whether you're gearing up for hunting season, planning your next RV trip, or getting your boat ready, Interstate has the battery for all your needs. With over 150,000 dealer locations, the power you need is always nearby. Interstate batteries aren't just about power. It's about being prepared for any situation. Don't let a dead battery ruin your adventure. Head over to interstatebatteries.com, use their store locator, and equip yourself with a battery that won't let you down. When you're out in the wild or just on your daily commute, an Interstate battery is your key to a dependable journey.
Yeah, I know. It's nice. It's nice to have Ranella walking around in the background sweating it out while we're hamming it up about
it's good for him.
The biggest issues. I like having you on. You know why? Because one of the reasons why, one of the many reasons, is because sometimes I get bothered about stuff and I'm not sure how to bring it up on the podcast. Like I get bothered about, like I was bothered about the public-private land thing. I was just bothered about it.
And it is bothersome. So you should feel it's right to be bothered. Because, yeah, man, I know so many awesome landowners and I have a lot in my family and they kick ass and they should be celebrated for that.
Yeah.
They should be.
Yeah.
It's just, it's hard to celebrate something that a lot of people aren't going to be able to touch.
I think you and I will start a series of podcasts where it's just like, it'll be called I'm Bothered By.
I like it.
And then it's just, we'll just talk about the shit that bothers us currently.
You know what grinds my gears?
You know what grinds my gears? Here's one thing, another thing that bothers me. And I don't even know how to really articulate it. And that's why I haven't brought it up to anybody yet. But guiding.
Yep.
Or the outfitting. Outfitting. Guiding is a subset of outfitting. You've been a guide.
Yep.
So as I look at, like, as I think about my own hunting and why I'm doing the thing, and I just read about hunting all the time, and I look at hunting on social media, and I talk to hunters. I moved to Bozeman to be around them and be a part of this thing. And it strikes me that there's a lot of examples of this, that outfitting can't help but be all about the antlers. Like, mm-hmm. It can't fucking help it. Almost just because of the way it's set up, the way it's done traditionally. Outfitting can't help but slide that book of photos across the table or have its main page on the website of the outfitter be a bunch of dead giant animals.
Yeah.
As to entice the people to come and see the giant animals and kill the giant animals that they've got.
Yep.
And so that's just bothered. That's something that's bothered me. And I've hunted with outfitters and guides my whole life. And I've had one or two that I can think that I would never go back with again, that it was a bad experience. They were helpful in my experiencing a place that I didn't know anything about.
Yep.
Or learning things or learning tactics or learning whatever. I mean, they were helpful in my hunting experience, not harmful. But like the optics of the outfitting game, you've been to SCI, you've been to Harrisburg, you've been to all these places that I've been to. Like the optics of it is the sales, making it a commodity, and then the selling of the opportunity at a big animal. Like my dad's doing it currently. He's going with an outfitter in Montana next month. And he was, instead of talking about the country, the place, the people he might meet, he was talking about the size of the antlers that the outfitter was showing him. That's not my dad, but it's like the outfitter was like, come hunt in Montana. Check it out.
Yep.
You know that very well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's been bothering me. What do you think about that?
You know, I think everybody wants to get something big.
Yeah.
You know, it's because they're not around every tree, right? And
But isn't that like one? I guess maybe one of the things that bothers me is that that's like an artificial. Like if you go out on public or private land and do all the work and get the big thing, that's what hunting is.
Yeah.
This is like
some. No, I've always said, like, so yeah, the marketing sales part.
Yeah.
Yeah, big animals, man, for sure. There's Adam Field to Table Hunts in Colorado.
Yeah.
And he does do some like, no, these are cow hunts and I'm gonna show you how to cut it up and you're gonna have cut wrap meat going home and that's super awesome. Obviously it's a much different customer than there's the sub category, the 1% of the hunting world that's like, yeah, can you give that meat away to somebody?
Yeah.
Like, or they don't even inquire to it at all. Right. It's like, give me my picture, make sure this gets the taxidermist and I'm back on the plane.
Can I take that a little bit deeper? Like there's that 1% that gives two shits about the meat, but there's another like deeper subset that cares about the meat a little bit.
Yep.
Enough to like eat some backstrap in camp and maybe if it's not inconvenient, take some home.
Yep.
I've seen a lot of examples of that kind of activity.
Like, yeah,
you know, taking some backstraps home and leaving the rest of the animal.
Yeah.
And saying, well, I love the meat. You left most of the meat.
Yeah. And I've seen that. It's real expensive to get on the plane. And you're like,
wait a minute. What? How'd you get here?
$6,000 hunt.
Yeah. I've seen that a lot in Canada, particularly because of how hard it is to get the entire moose back to the States. People are like, I'll just take the big cuts that I like.
Yeah.
Look, that's not wrong. But I've just, like I said, it's like there's some bothersome like threads of that I think. So the greater public, to the non-hunting public, don't look so good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And there are some realities and truths to that in the hunting space.
Yeah. So. But I have always said, like, a really good guide, really good outfitter, they are going to make you feel as if you did it. Like you came over that ridge and you spotted the animal and you got yourself like, and they're there facilitating, right?
Yeah.
That's what I said.
Most of my guides. Yeah.
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 But if you don't have that sense of accomplishment, then they did a bad job.
Sure.
Dead animal or not.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because there's folks that can trick themselves into thinking something different, but if it's like, well, you know, all I did really was pull the trigger.
Yeah.
That's not, in my mind, you didn't.
Yeah.
You turned in B work as a guide, not A work.
Yeah. And that's what I would make that point again is that I say it bothers me. I think you made the great statement. It's like the marketing is what bothers me. Most of my guided hunts, I've always come off a better hunter with a great experience and felt like fulfilled by the thing.
Yeah. And ideally, like that guide outfitter that you're spending time with, you're like, you know, you're like, I want to spend time with them again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a lot of that going on. In fact, you know, I just got a text from a guy named Mike Hawkridge that the first moose hunt I ever did with Rogan up in British Columbia, like that dude's remained a friend.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it wasn't like the most hardcore moose hunt ever, but it was a great time and I'm glad that I did it. So I think, yeah, I think that it's more my biggest issue with always thinking about the messaging around what we do is the marketing of like the intrinsic person to person marketing of outfitters,
mm-hmm.
like how it shows up online, how it shows up at trade shows, how that like, and I've seen, and you've likely seen documentaries and Vice episodes and different like non-hunting coverage of hunting that goes to the trade show and makes it look like a circus. You know, goes to SCI and shows, you know, the dude walking up and asking about the lion.
Yeah.
And seeing the flip book of dead animals. Like it, and they play like yakety sax while the person's walking around in the trade show. Because to somebody on the outside, that shit looks really weird.
It does.
And it looks you know, it looks very, you know, looks like trophy hunting.
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, I was, when I was, speaking to my class yesterday at the University of Montana.
We need to discuss that part too. Cal's a guest. Did you say guest lecturer?
Yeah. And, which was awesome because the University of Montana and I didn't exactly leave on great terms. Didn't part ways on great terms.
Guess it wasn't.
They were studying, like that what guiding was, what outfitting was. Yeah. And, but of course, like they start in the 19th century, right? Where the real deal trophy hunting was taking place.
Oh yeah.
Where you had like your caravan of taxidermists and, you know, and
a lot of tweed going on.
Oh man. And, you know, man, I get to go a lot of places and chat with a lot of folks as you do. The amount of hunters that I run into that I would consider trophy hunters, like that definition of trophy hunters is so, so small.
Minuscule.
And again, like it's that 1% of the hunting population. And unfortunately, like hunting that we talk about them all the time ourselves.
Oh yeah.
And the media certainly focuses on there and you know, the more the media refers to Donald Trump Jr. as your average hunter, the more we lose. Cause that just,
yeah, he may be your average hunter, but there's plenty of examples of him doing non-average things in the hunting space. Like,
yes,
it is. It, that's a challenge. And I think that's probably why I know for a fact, having experienced it, it's not trophy hunting. Like, you don't go to the Harris, you know, the Great American Outdoor Show in Harrisburg, and there's a bunch of trophy hunters there. That's not the case. But I think a conversation we could have better that I've seen at that show is like a Wyoming mule deer outfitter sitting at his booth at Harrisburg with his giant, his heads everywhere and his pictures of all the antlers. And then to get the non-trophy hunting regular guy that has just extra $5,000 that wants to go out west is all of a sudden like walking around looking for the guy with the biggest heads.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't blame either party. And I know what they're doing, and I know it's not that. I know it's not what you're talking about.
Right.
But I think the optics of it are such.
The optics of it are such.
Could be improved.
Yep.
A little bit. That's what I've been bothered about lately.
I don't have anything that really comes to mind, because you know that average Joe, just like anybody for any situation, you're like, yep, I'm gonna go out west, and you're a skier, and you're looking at resorts, and one has 300 inches of powder every year, and the other one has 800 inches of powder every year.
Yeah.
You're like, well, probably going to go for more snow, not less.
800 inches.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that, but it, that even goes back to just the focusing on just the animal, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
What they really want is a kick-ass all-around experience.
Yes.
That's what they really want.
That's what they really desire.
And if...
How do we give that to them without saying the big deer is the end? You know, the big deer is always the end result. Always. Always. And I support that. I'm with you. I want them all too. Like, I desire, when I see a big mule deer, I lust after that motherfucker. Like, I would marry it. Like, if it would like to spend time with me.
What are you thinking about, Ben?
chasing it around. Up.
Yeah.
So I get it. I'm not saying I don't get that, but like I said, I mean, I think if I took my non-hunting brother to a hunting trade show and he stood and watched that interaction, he would not get the reality of the situation.
Yes.
In my opinion, I think. So I think that part of our industry could use a little, you know, just more of a conversation about that one thing.
It is. And if you sit in on those conversations with those outfitters, the first 30 seconds, they're like, yeah,
this is a great example of a deer.
Yes. Yep.
And you may have an opportunity at a buck like that.
Yeah.
If you come out with me, but they're not behind every tree.
No.
Right?
Yep. These are prime examples, right? We are putting the best tomatoes in the front of the display.
Yes.
Like that's how, and yeah, most of them will do that. And a lot of the conversations, it's a sit down, like, what's the tent camp like? What's the food like?
Yeah.
You know, how long you been doing this? Like, you got a family? Like, that's how people have the conversation, you know?
Yeah.
Most of the time. But it's,
but it's, yeah, like, face value, it's like, well, all these folks are just looking to kill big shit.
Yeah.
And that's it.
If you walk down the aisles and you didn't like listen into those conversations, you'd be like, this is a antler and horn market.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely. And again, like that trophy part of the conversation is such a small part of the conversation when you're actually booking a hunt with an outfitter and they get through it as fast as possible. They're like, yeah, those animals do exist. Obviously, they're mounted and stuffed and right in front of your face. They do exist. That's a great example of
a thing. Yeah.
Like, but there are no guarantees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the one thing I would say, like, as our segment concludes, what bothers me today? I recently have been bothered by that, and I just wanted to tell you. Nothing will come of it. Other than that, it was something I was thinking about around my dad's hunt and like how it was presented to him. All right, I don't normally do this. I might have done it one other time, but we asked for questions for you and for me.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
I got some. They're pretty good.
Cool.
Pretty good. This one is from Meat Eating Canadian. Are there any specific bones from large game that we can use for stock/broth if we find out our animal has CWD, or should they be left alone altogether?
So
CWD being chronic wasting disease, of course.
I think if you are really following the whole and total guidelines, you want to discard those bones, whatever they may be, but certainly the spinal column and the head, in the same place that you got that deer.
Yeah.
So don't travel around with them, and unfortunately don't make stock with them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's, you hear all kinds of reactions to it, right? But that's a pretty specific example. There's CWD hanging around, and I have a deer that's tested positive for it.
Really?
No, I don't. I'm just saying.
Oh, yes.
I say the Green Ridge State Forest that I hunted in growing up, there was CWD in that county, a big outbreak of CWD, and they cut the deer tags down for some years around that. That's my only experience, but we kind of just quit hunting up there for a couple of years. Of course, I moved away at some point during that, but it was less of a thing because of it. So that's, I think now it's like we know CWD is a thing. We know it's around. What's the appropriate reaction for hunters?
You know? Yeah, and I do think that's it. Now, I know, I believe the Department of Natural Resources says, you know, just don't deal with the spinal column or the brain or anything with spinal fluid. But if you read some other sources, they tell you to leave all the bones in place. So I would just say until we get a handle on this, we just, you got, unfortunately it sucks, but you got to skip making stock on that critter.
You got to.
Yeah.
You just have to. It's not worth it.
It's not worth it. No.
Here's another. I got some pretty funny ones, but nobody would understand a lot of these questions. We have a whatever Trevor is asking, is Montana better than Texas?
Boy, you lived in the state of Texas.
You've been there, though.
Oh, yeah. Man, and Texan pride is not to be messed with.
No.
they put it on shirts. Don't mess with Texas.
So I'm not going to mess with it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to answer that question.
No, man. I mean, it depends on what you're into.
Yeah.
Right?
You like barbecue? Hmm? You like shorts and flip-flops? Texas, baby.
Texas hospitality is a real
fantastic
thing. Man.
As fantastic. As a father of a young child, do you like breweries with playgrounds? Absolutely. I love that. And there's copious amounts of that going on in Texas. That seems to be similar here in Montana. Right now, it's very cold outside of Montana. It's very warm outside in Texas.
Yeah. I mean, variety is the spice of life, right?
That's damn right.
You got a lot of opportunities in Texas that you don't have in Montana. You got a lot of opportunities in Montana that you don't have in Texas.
Yeah.
You know, try it all.
What about spice is the variety of life? That's a t-shirt idea.
Spice is the variety of life.
It's deep.
That
not,
is.
Not funny. We're not going to do that one. No, that, we never, we'll cut that. We'll edit that out of the podcast.
Put a pen in this one.
Yeah, put a pen. B-Shook 5. Let's talk tongues. Best tongue recipe.
Yeah. So the simple deal with tongue is it is a tough muscle. So pressure cooker or boil it. And then you can pull the hide of the tongue off and the meat on the inside is really tender and great.
And that's a delicate process, pulling that hide off the tongue, huh?
It can be. If you get the timing right, like you cook it long enough, then that meat separates almost on its own.
See, I've screwed that up in the past.
Yeah.
On elk tongue.
And on a deer tongue, if you're leaving a lot of meat on that hide, then you're not left with a lot of meat in real short fashion. So, and then from there, man, you can do anything you want with it. Make tacos out of it. Do whatever. I saute it. When I collect a lot of them, I saute them in green olives, pimentos, garlic, a little bit of red wine. And I throw some morels in there, and then I serve it all on top of polenta.
Oh.
And it's real, real nice.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite
meats. I love polenta. I fucking love morels.
Yes.
Put a little elk tongue in there, and I'm
happy camper.
Coming over.
Yep.
I live way closer to you now. Coming.
Yep.
Coming over. Let's see if we can find one more real good one. Got a lot of specific ones about that are making me laugh, but nothing. Everybody wants to know, like, your favorite thing to cook, man. Like, your favorite cut.
It's a tough question because I just really enjoy cooking, and it's super fun to try new stuff, and you got to make sure that you're just like constantly kicking your butt out of that rut. And I'll open a cookbook and try something else out to really force myself to do something different.
Yeah.
Because it's just so easy to cook the same thing.
Yeah, I have a problem with that.
Similar things.
I have a major problem. That's the freezer problem that I've had. I've had so much like straps and loins. And
yes. So Kimmy Werner.
Mm-hmm. Love her.
Love her. Kimmy Swimmy.
Yeah, look her up. You know who she is. You better get to it.
Yeah. And incredible voice for food and harvesting critters. You know, she came over and I gave her a whole mule deer loin to play with. And she cut it up, pounded it thin, and lightly fried it. And I was just like, oh my God, you just ruined my mule deer backstrap.
Yeah.
I love those things, but I'm being polite because you're my house guest. And she could tell. She was like,
are you okay, Cal?
Yeah. Are you
getting a little red there, bud? What's going on?
And so she's like, listen, I know food's important to you. It's super important to me. I feel like I disrespected your animal. And we had this big heart to heart. The reality is I'm just an asshole. And I was like, no, that was absolutely phenomenal food. I ate it. I ate all the leftovers yesterday and they were even better than the first night. And I have a surplus of meat.
Oh yeah.
And I should never think that this has to be cooked this way.
Yeah.
And it was it was great. And it was just me being set my ways.
Oh, we've got, yeah. And there's a, this podcast is a, there's a thing with my wife where I'm always just mean to her about cooking a wild game. And I don't want to be. She's an awesome person, way better than me at almost everything. But I get so pent up about like her cooking the game, and maybe it might not be the best it could be.
This is how you do this. And this is the only way.
I turn into a complete idiot when it comes to that.
But I had this antelope loin, and I smashed it flat. You know, cut it into steaks, like good inch and a half inch steaks, smashed it down into probably quarter inch steaks, and put a little bit of, here's a immigrated Texican, Jess Pryles.
Oh, yeah.
She does some cool stuff.
She's cool, yeah, man. Yeah. I like her. Hardcore carnivore.
Hardcore carnivore.
Right. I met her a couple times.
And she came out with a game seasoning. And I put a little bit of that on there, and then I put a little Italian breadcrumbs on there and just smashed it in. And just a little bit, like more like seasoning than a breading.
Yeah. Like a light crust.
Butter, olive oil, big chunks of garlic. Got that going until the garlic started to brown up. Pulled the garlic out, slid the antelope in there. Got it 90% of the way cooked, still on the raw side. Pulled it back out. Threw the garlic in there, shallots, bunch of morels.
Yeah.
They soaked all that butter and olive oil up and cooked, and then put the meat back in and had, I feel like that should be called scallopini, but I don't honestly know if that's
That sounds right.
But
go with it.
It was absolutely phenomenal. Oh,
dude.
And I would have just been eating, you know, beautiful, medium rare barbecued antelope loin if I hadn't been like, oh, I got to try something different.
Yeah. So what you're telling people is expand. Expand.
Yeah.
It's very important to expand.
It is.
Try new things and screw it up and try again.
It is. And you're going to mow through that freezer so much faster if you're excited to try new stuff. You know?
Yeah. And there's that's the way, even for me, processing game, like, do you have muscle groups? You have, it's, it seems pretty straightforward, but sometimes there's little things you can do to make it quicker, make it easier. And those are the things that you remember and you can pass on to other people. Yep. Same with cooking, but you got to try it first.
Yeah.
You know, maybe one time they screw up the shank as you're chopping it off, but next time you're going to know.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all you learn. A lot of mustache queries. How many mustache push-ups can you do? Mustache, you know, be like, what are some good tips for a nice mustache? Do you have any final thoughts around mustaches particularly?
I had bought a thing of mustache wax many years ago in, you know, the West Coast epicenter of hipsterdom, Seattle.
Oh, yeah.
And facial hair.
Yep.
I still have that tin of mustache wax. So occasionally, like particularly in the winter months, and hair growth is really, really moving, I'll wax it up just a little bit, keep my mustache out of my food, but that's about all.
Have you ever been chewing on a piece of food and thought, well, there's a hair in it, and realized that you were only chewing on your own facial hair?
And that's gross.
Still attached to your face.
It is. Yeah.
I find that to be a problem.
Yeah.
Like, who put this hair in there? Oh, this is gross. All right. I think that's it. I don't see, I'll have to look again, but thank you. We got 78 people commenting and asking questions. So thank you for all of those folks who did that. I don't really ever do that, but that's pretty cool that everybody wrote in. Thank you for that. Thank you for that. What's next for you, man? What are you doing now?
Granny's 90th birthday.
Whoa.
Yep. My grandma Marion Walton is
happy birthday, Marion.
Yeah, tough old bird. And
like there's no 90-year-old weak old bird.
Yeah. And so we're the big family, the clan's getting together. Starting tomorrow, and we're gonna do big food throwdown. And I got a whole antelope ham that I threw in the sous vide in the truck. And And yeah, we're going to throw down for Granny. And then I'm coming back here and joining the crew and flying out to Maryland.
My home place.
To hunt Sika deer, which is something I've been very excited about.
It's a beautiful, delicious creature.
Yes.
Non-native, but delicious.
Yes.
There he goes. People are leaving work now. They're like going home to their families.
And we've totally avoided any moving.
This is great. That was really great. Well,
well planned out, man.
Well, I'm good at some things. Well, enjoy Maryland. That's a fun hunt. That's a wonderful deer. And we'll look forward to it the next season of Meat Eater TV. Right? So absolutely. If you listen to this, go watch Callahan on season 7 of Meat Eater TV. You freeloaders. Like, make sure you go. You click on Netflix and watch all the episodes.
It'll be... I am very excited. I started researching this hunt 6 years ago.
6 years ago?
Yeah. Now. And Steve and Giannis one day, they were like, so, not saying we can make this happen, but if we could do any hunt you wanted to do... I was like, seek a deer in Maryland. They're like, what? They're like,
seek a deer in Maryland.
Doll sheep. I'm like, dude, seek a deer in Maryland. It's got history. There's food. It's cheap. There's public land.
It's. Like, I'm not going to say, I'll let you guys break the news on the refuge you can go to and do it. I've done it not many times, but growing up, I'd travel over there and do it here and there. But it is to be in the roar for the seek a deer in the swamps of southern Maryland on the eastern shore is pretty freaking unique. You're eating oysters, crab cakes, and drinking Yingling, living the life. So go, my friend. Drain the Yingling from the shore.
Love it.
And enjoy
it. Thank you.
All right, man. Thank you.
Thanks a bunch.
That's it. That's all. Episode number 31 of the podcast in the books. Thank you once again to Mr. Ryan Callahan for hanging out and listening to some of the things that bothered me and asking some of his own questions about what we've got going on at Meat Eater Incorporated right now. All that said, again, I will reiterate, all the Hunting Collective content is going to live on themeateater.com. You can go to the Listen tab to listen to all of these podcasts. You can go to my contributor page to read all the articles and just poke around and read some stuff from Mark Kenyon, Wired to Hunt, April Vokey from Anchored, Pat Durkin, Chef Eduardo Garcia, a bunch of other folks that are contributing, including, of course, Steve Ranella. It's been fun to launch this, and it's been even better to talk to you about it because we've been wanting to do that for quite some time. So thanks to everybody who wrote in and texted and called and reacted to our launch 2 weeks ago now, and our why we do what we do. And so we are in Montana. We are stationed. We are in an empty office. We're currently putting furniture in. And we're going to start this journey that is Meat Eater Incorporated and Hunting Collective as a partnership. So that is it. Next podcast will be also in lovely Montana. So stay tuned with us. We'll be right back at you next Tuesday. Bye.
Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today. You ever get that feeling? The walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.